Third hour of Darren and Donick on this Wednesday afternoon. Darren McFarland, Steve Lehman, News Channel 5. Tron Davenport, NFL Nation reporter for the Titans for ESPN.com. Also talking with TD. You can hear that podcast. You can hear it on these airwaves on ESPN 102.5, the game as well. And I like to keep you on your toes, especially in the summer months. So I don't even like to tell you. I just want to find out who's out there paying attention, who's listening. So right now, be caller 5, and we will send you to Bridgestone Arena on Friday night, July 19th, to see Michael Bublé. 737-1025, 737-1025. Lucky caller 5. That'll be a Friday evening for you, and probably with the missus or the significant other, and you'll have a good time. Bridgestone Arena, Michael Bublé, 737-1025. Teron, what's up?
What's going on?
I told you during the break, I have not worn it yet outside of the house. I just washed it, but I've got it packed for my trip because we've got 14 guys from all over the country. They're getting ready to meet in Gatlinburg for 4 days. We do this once a year.
Okay.
And so I packed one of my shirt or something I got for Father's Day, and it was a USFL T-shirt. Because the last time you were in here, you had a USFL shirt on, and I was on the air going, wow, I really like that. Where did you get that? And so my wife was listening, and she remembered that. And so I got a USFL shirt for Father's Day. And so I've packed that, and I'm taking that with me on the trip. I'm going to don it for the first time for the guys, see if I can get a little reaction out of them, kind of like what I did with you. Now, today, you've gotten our attention again.
He's got another good one on.
With another shirt. And I just can't keep buying shirts every time you come in here, but I do like the shirt. Describe it to the radio audience out there. You just have to paint the picture.
So it's a black shirt, and it has a picture of a cartoon crab and a cartoon tree on the front. And in the back, it says 1-5 in red. It's the number 15. And if you put crab and tree together, you get crab tree. I've always been a fan of Michael Crabtree. Now that he's not affiliated with any team, I feel comfortable wearing it. So pulled it out, took the iron to it, and, you know, here we are.
So you bought this while he was still playing just because you liked the shirt, but you weren't going to wear it while he's playing.
I bought it back when I was a 49ers fan. Crazy thing. I remember watching him his freshman year. He had 1,900 yards receiving, 22 touchdowns, 90-something catches. And I just was like, man, this guy is awesome. And then I watched him his second year. 2 years in college, 2 years won the Fred Biletnikoff Award. So I was a huge Crabtree fan, and I remember seeing how that whole draft fell out and the Raiders. They took Hayward Bay, and the 49ers took Crabtree. So now my favorite college prospect was playing for my favorite team at the time. So I said I got to have it.
Hmm.
But once I got into media, I tucked it away and didn't wear it.
Smart man.
Believe it or not, I was just looking at his numbers, 89 receptions, which was the 2016 year with the Raiders, was the most catches he had in a season.
Yeah.
That's hard to believe.
Well, he was stuck in those Jimmy Ray, you know, they were watching Vince Ferragamo and Flipper Anderson and Eric Dickerson. They were watching that film. So he was stuck in some prehistoric offenses. But once Greg Roman got there with Jim Harbaugh, he had a 1,000-yard season with Kaepernick.
Yeah, he never got to play with Montana or Steve Young in San Francisco.
No. Best quarterbacks, Kaepernick, Derek Carr. He had a half a season with Flacco. He actually scored against the Titans last year. Yeah. He had a touchdown corner of the end zone. I caught that from Flacco. But, yeah, Crabtree was a good player, man. Good route runner, sticky hands. But it just deserted him.
Sometimes it happens.
He had a good run, though.
Yeah, solid run.
I mean, he never thanked his hands like Freddie Mitchell did, but, you know.
That's my guy, man. I was actually just talking to Freddie this weekend, man.
Really?
That's my home. Freddie is good people. He's good people. I know there's a different image of him in the media and in the public, but Freddie's a great dude, man. Great dude.
What is he doing with his hands these days?
He's using them to distribute backpacks to the less fortunate.
Well, good
but
for him.
Mostly, very he's good. Man, that guy's Instagram is off the charts. He has one of the top Instagram accounts, man.
You have any of his T-shirts?
No. I don't have any of his T-shirts. He hasn't come out with any, but 4th and 26, That was a big thing in Philly, so there are some fans walking around with those shirts.
Oh, Freddie Mitchell. I didn't think he was going to make it in the conversation today. I'm glad he did.
He came up when I was talking to Drew Bennett a couple weeks ago, Freddie, because Freddie told me, because I think we were talking about Drew Bennett, and one of the stories he told me about Drew Bennett was that Drew got the respect from all the brothers on campus because he was banging on their necks in basketball. He said Drew Bennett was dunking on anybody, and that's how you couldn't mess with Drew. Like, you know, sometimes, you know, you're in college and people pick on other people. You couldn't pick on Drew Bennett because the brothers had his back because they respected him because he dunked on him.
He was a guy that looked like a country club kid, right? Looked like he should wear an Izod. Good-looking kid, but just unassuming. You would never think that he was a crazy, crazy athlete, as you were saying.
And
speaking of great guys, great guy. But, I mean, Floyd Reese has told the story, and I remember him telling us the story. Like, I mean, this – tells you the, I mean, what kind of freak he is. He woke up in college at UCLA, him and his buddies. They woke up and said, you know what? Let's go run a full marathon today. The marathon's in town. Let's go run a full marathon. 26.2 miles? And they did it.
That's
no
crazy.
Training, no nothing.
Wow.
Woke up and said, let's go run a full marathon.
What's insane about that isn't so much that, I mean, it's all insane. But what's crazy to me about that isn't so much that Drew Bennett, who ultimately was a professional athlete and just a freak of nature, could do it. It's impressive to me that he had a buddy or multiple buddies
who could
do it right there with him.
Hey, birds of a feather, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I guess.
Locked together.
But like,
who were those guys dunking on?
That's a good question.
You talked about Dylan Windler and golf, and we were talking about these guys.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Drew Bennett is one of those guys, whether it's basketball. Remember, he was a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
He played receiver in the NFL. He was a quarterback.
Yeah.
Just goes to show you, man, there's just certain – we've all been around that person, right, that you feel like you could hand them anything, and they could just go out there and they would be good at it instantly.
Some guys are just freaks, but I'm guessing Dylan Windler doesn't have buddies at Belmont or back home in Indy that could just run a marathon.
In April, the marathon here?
You know,
no?
They're not all shooting 68s, then dropping 30 against Murray State, and then running a marathon on the weekend.
Yeah, no doubt about it. We were talking earlier. We wanted to get into this with you. We'll start here. I'm sure we'll probably need more time. We'll have to pick up the discussion. I'm gonna phrase it this way. From an outsider right now, an outsider here, it looks like the Texans and the Jags look a little bit dysfunctional. Different levels, different ways. But if I were to ask you, who looks more like they've got some craziness going on behind the scenes where they don't look like a well-oiled machine, who would that answer be for you?
I would say the Texans, just because, I mean, you had a GM a year and a half and you get rid of them.
It's weird.
And I understand after the draft, like, because there's so much that goes into the draft, you got to keep the guy because he's done so much work and he's been on the same page with all the scouts the whole time. You have to keep him. It seems weird to fire him after the draft, but I get it.
But how bad do you have to be, Teron, to be sent packing with a year and a half as a GM? I mean, hell, Ryan Grigson lasted way longer than he ever should. I mean, if there's a guy that should have been fired in a year and a half, it was Grigson. You're just not used to seeing that front office guys going that quickly.
Yeah, I mean, usually you give a guy a chance.
Right.
I mean, he didn't have a chance, and they got rid of him. Apparently you had the thing where they were in communication with the guy from the Patriots, and that backfired. So I would say them. I think the Jaguars, when you look at them, okay, yeah, they're not giving – Jalen Mills, Eagles mind. They're not giving Jalen Ramsey the deal this year. And, yeah, he's on. But they're just doing – it's they're homies. You know, Jalen and Leonard Fournette and the linebacker, 44, name slips my mind. But they go back and forth on social media, on Instagram. It's for fun. So I don't really – I know some people are making a big deal about Jalen and Fournette going back and forth. But I don't think it's a major thing. The Texans – that's a huge issue, and they need to get that right. And if I'm Deshaun Watson, I'm even more upset because you had – now, granted, the young man, the guy that got Titus Howard, should be a good prospect, you know, at some point, but he's a project right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I need somebody to protect me immediately when I'm getting beat up the way I'm getting beat up if I'm Deshaun Watson.
My big thing when I look at the Texans is I just think their roster isn't as good now as it was a year ago.
Yeah.
And when everybody else in the division is making strides, I think the Colts are better after a great season last year. I think the Titans roster is better right now than it was a year ago at this point. I think clearly the Jaguars are better, especially if you're a believer in Nick Foles. I don't think you say the same thing about the Texans. The defense is getting older, and they've been needing to shore up that offensive line for years now, and there's no real sign that they've done that to this point. So I'm kind of with Darren in the sense that I worry a little bit about – the antics in Jacksonville, because I think when things go poorly like last year, that's the type of stuff that can blow up and tear a team apart. But when I just look at it right here this summer, who's good and who's not, I see how the Jaguars could get their swagger back by winning. I look at the Texans and think that roster's just not very good right now.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, just to kind of piggyback off what you said about the Jaguars, they got another wild child in the mix now with Terrell Pryor. And yeah, I'll just leave it at that. He's a wild child.
Well, no, so, Wilt Moore. So that's
that thing could spin out of control.
That's what I'm getting at. They seem like they've got a lot of that. To me, what examples do we have in the league where you've got a lot of outspoken guys, a lot of guys saying whatever they want on social media, fighting at practice, and then you're talking about adding another wild child at least, and who knows if he'll be on the roster
or not? Yeah,
but. It just seems like when you're teetering like that, with certain guys, and I'm not saying these guys, I don't know these guys, but when you have very outspoken, some of these guys, if you're not winning, it gets really bad, right? It gets way worse in a hurry.
I could see finger pointing starting in Jacksonville if they don't win. I could see that starting and that thing falling apart. Unlike when the Titans went through their stretch, that five game, you know, where it was just, nothing was working. There wasn't any finger pointing. So I think you're going to have two opposite ends of the spectrum. And when you look at, you know, Miles Jack, that's who his name slipped my mind.
Miles at 44, Jack.
Yeah. And when you look at him and you look at Calais Campbell, you know, that defense is in awesome shape. But it's just, can that offense pick up their half of the weight?
Isn't it fair to say, guys, that they quit on the Thursday night game here?
Yeah, they quit.
I mean, it looked like they quit in the second half to me.
Yeah. I think they quit on last season.
Basically.
They got off to a good start, then they hit adversity. And what TD's saying is, you know, the Titans hit adversity at a few different points last year. And at times they weren't a very good football team, but that was never a fractured football team.
Yep.
The locker room was always together. And you'll see the same thing this year. If the Titans go in a patch where they lose two or three in a row, that locker room's going to stay together, and they're going to point to the end goal.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Jaguars go one of two ways. I don't think they can be a middle-of-the-pack, like, 8-8 team. They're either going to get on fire, and they're going to reclaim the swagger that they had 2 years ago, where they're a division champion type of team, or they're going to hit that adversity some point, and I think they fall apart. I don't know which way it goes, but I think it's that level of extreme when you're talking about this Jacksonville group.
There's no lukewarmness with Jacksonville, that's for sure.
No, you're right about that.
Just real quick on the Texans, I don't get how you could have the same issue for 3 years when you have drafts and you have free agency. How can you have the same issue for 3 years?
Are you talking about their offensive line?
Their offensive line.
And now
line.
Two GMs who've known the problem and haven't been able to fix it.
Yeah, I don't know.
And oh, by the way, and I know that most of these front office people, those people weren't there, but they've done this before to their franchise quarterback. Does anybody remember David Carr?
He never recovered.
He never recovered, from the
man.
Beating he took. And Deshaun Watson's well on his way if they don't figure out a way to start protecting him.
Yeah, he's too good to waste, man.
Yeah.
Too good to waste.
Teron Davenport in studio this hour with us. More talking with TD. On the other side, congratulations, Cody Martinson of Murfreesboro, down there listening on 97.5. He was lucky caller 5. Cody, congrats. You'll be at Michael Bublé at Bridgestone Arena on Friday night, July 19th. More football on the other side. Darren and Donick, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Thank you, Pete. We'll talk to Jeff Merrick coming up at 1 o'clock. Right now, it's Teron Davenport, NFL Nation reporter for ESPN on the Titans. And Adam Rank from NFL Network. I know everybody's rolling their eyes like, oh, boy, we've all heard it by now. I don't know if Adam was – I don't know Adam. I don't know if he was – his rankings, he was looking for the eye roll, if he was looking for somebody to talk about Adam Rank because maybe it worked. I'd never heard of Adam Rank, and now I'm talking about Adam Rank. So if that's what he was looking, if that was the effect, he got it.
I feel like he got bored. It's like they gave him all the teams to go through in one afternoon, and he got to like 20 and just gave up. He was like, I don't know. Lost. 3-13. There we go. Back to you. You know?
He didn't research, it seemed like.
It didn't seem like there was a lot of research.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. You know, you have teams like the Titans, and you have teams like the Jaguars. You have teams. There's just certain teams that just don't have the draw. And even when they're good, they still don't have the draw. And I think the Titans are one of those teams, but still, as a journal, you have to. And especially if you're going to do a segment, like it's not like today where I just came in here and sat down and we're talking. This is a segment that you know that you're doing, and you know the topic.
They plan this out.
Yeah, like how do you do that so poorly? And I guess that's what they want to put out there.
Well,
NFL Network, but it's terrible. He's a fantasy football guy, from what I understand. So maybe, you know, because the Titans don't have a fantasy football phenomenon, he's like, all right, well, you know what? 3-13. They're not going to give me anything. So, yeah, 3-13.
You're looking for a lot of content this time of year.
It does happen in this business in June. Well, if you didn't hear it, here's what he had to say. Adam Rank, NFL Network.
The Tennessee Titans. This is going to be a tough one because the first four games of the season are against four playoff caliber teams, going up against the Browns, the Colts, the Jags, the Falcons. You got a loss, you got a loss, you got a loss, you got a loss. Now you're 0-4, but you know what? Even though I like the Buffalo Bills, I think being at home, you get a win there, you end up getting a win. No, you're going to end up losing to the Broncos, going on the road and losing there. What I do think you will do, playing host to the Chargers are going to be in a little bit of a weird part of their schedule right here, where they'll be looking ahead, which is an opportunity to go out, sneak a win against the LA Chargers, one of the best teams in the NFL, and then you beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, so now you're sitting here, week 8, 3-5, you think like, okay, we could turn this around, maybe there's some hope for the future, and then you go to Carolina, you're like, okay, that, you know, you lose again to Carolina. Then you got to play host to Kansas City. All right, that's a tough one. All right, it's 3-7. You got a bye week. Perhaps you regroup. You make a strong run. You win out. You could probably get a playoff berth, but you got to play my friends down in Duval County. There's a loss. You got to go to Indianapolis. There's a loss. At the Raiders, loss. Okay, now we're just, I don't mean this personally. If Taylor Lewan is seeing this, if Marcus Mariota is seeing, listen, huge fans of you guys. But unfortunately, the way I see your schedule working out, 3-13, I don't want it to be this way. If I could have been unrealistic and given everybody 13 wins, I would do that. But you know what? The way the schedule works out, especially with the tough start, you got some tough games here in the middle stretch from weeks 10, 12, and 13. And then at that point, the season is just starting to unravel. So unfortunately, Tennessee Titan fans, it's not going to work out playoff-wise, but you'll get a cool draft pick. So you got that to look forward to.
Well, geez, I'm so glad he went realistic on us.
He went deep. Those were deep thoughts. In fact, that could have made it to Saturday Night Live. In fact, the only real analysis was the Chargers maybe looking ahead, which I think you could make a case outside of New England because you have to always say that. The Chargers may be the best team in the AFC.
They went up to New England and lost. So, that's next level analysis, though. I mean,
they may be looking ahead.
He mentioned two players on the team, so you know I'll give him credit for that. But
he knew Lewan and Mariota.
Yeah. Other than that,
the quarterback and a Pro Bowler.
And I say that, you know, with pure sarcasm. But this team has beaten the Jaguars consistently, even when they were top shelf. So I'm not sure why you're just going to automatically conclude that they're going to get swept. And then, oh, by the way, you got two of the greatest players in franchise history. Their jersey will be retired in the season opener.
Right.
Yeah. I'm just saying.
He has them going 0-6
in the division.
The home opener, the rest of the AFC South. Yeah. This team, even in their worst days, didn't go 0-6 against the division. So, I mean, look, every year we do similar exercises at least once, if not twice, from the time the schedule comes out to training camp, and it's always a crapshoot because it's impossible to pick the surprise team or who the flop team is or something like that. But it's also impossible for me to sit here right now and look at a team that went 9-7 the last 3 years, improved its roster in the offseason, and you're going to tell me they're going to be 6 wins worse next year?
Right.
I mean, that's laughable. Right. I'm not going to sit here and tell you I know the record, but they're not going to go 3-13. They just aren't.
Hey, you know what? Let's call it what it is. It's loose not even analysis. It's loose predictions, you know? That's basically.
What would have to happen? I think that's what I would like to ask him. Well, or not even ask him. Us talk about what would have to happen for them to slip into 3-13.
They would have.
I mean, what would the scenario have to be?
It would have to be a huge funk. Mariota is not playing. Another tragic injury like the Delanie Walker one, and just a complete meltdown on the defense. Maybe let's say they're not able to get after the quarterback. You know, which is a question mark that's out there.
But so. they really didn't do that last year. And the Titans still had a top 10 defense. That's maybe, as you bring this up, TD, that's maybe the thing that I think is the most overlooked aspect of this team.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe because there isn't a superstar pass rusher, even Jarrell Casey, as great as he is and as impactful as he is, he's not the type of guy that's going to put up 12 sacks and blow you away with it. And in the back end, Byard had a great year 2 years ago, but you don't have a guy who's likely to get 7 interceptions or 8 interceptions or something like that. But you have a bunch of good pieces. And I think for that reason, again, maybe the fantasy aspect, people overlook how good this defense is.
Exactly.
I think this defense is one of the best defenses in the league.
There's one stat that Dean Pease goes by, and that's points. And they were third in scoring defense, you know, points allowed. I think that really puts a bow around everything when you talk about the defense. Teams struggle to score points against them. They may be able to drive down the field, but it gets into the red zone and some things happen where that grip just gets tightened just a little bit more and they settle for a field goal. That's really the bottom line. Now, my thing is if this offense can figure out a way to end drives with touchdowns more consistently and not field goals, now you have a winning formula and you could really see them not having this foolish record that your guy, Adam Rank, says that they will.
It's the best roster they've had in probably a decade.
I think so.
It's
the best roster they've had in a decade.
It's pretty stacked, man. Pretty stacked.
Now, can anything happen in the NFL where just bodies can fall everywhere and a season can get derailed? Sure, but I mean – literally, that's exactly what would have to happen for them to finish 3-13. Everything that could go wrong would have to go wrong for them to be 3-13. Now,
it's not likely, you know. And even you mentioned the roster. Actually, for talking with TD tonight, we're doing just kind of ranking within a division roster by position. And I was going through and looking at it, and I tell you, it's back and forth. Colts, Titans, Colts, Titans, Colts, Titans. Jaguars are in there on a couple things, but you know, this roster, like you said, is definitely in great shape. And it would take a lot of things to go wrong for them not to have more than 3 wins. So I think that's something that it sometimes, you know, like my dad would tell me, you know, don't argue with a fool. You know what I mean? And he'd always say, you argue with a fool, the only one that's going to end up getting more intelligent is going to be the fool you're arguing with, you know. So, for me, that whole Adam Rank thing, you know, I just kind of – and I'm not calling him a fool. I'm not disrespect. I think what he said was foolish, and I don't even put stock in it.
Their schedule, I'll grant it. The schedule is tough. I do. Now, it's tough in June when we're looking at it, right, because we never know how it's all going to play out. That's why it's really silly, but we all have to do it. Look, it's whether it's you're doing content for a website or you're doing content for a radio show or you're doing content for a TV show. We all have to do it because, one, that's what we all do. Fans do it. Everybody tries to predict how it's going to play out, what looks like a win, what looks like a loss, what's the final record going to be, and that's all fine. But things happen in the course of a season where teams fall apart or the franchise quarterback goes down. I mean, there's no way of knowing. But today in June, late June, it is a tough schedule. I mean, when it first came out, I was like, you know, looks like a lot of really good football teams on there. I mean, I think the Panthers are way up in the air because of their franchise quarterback. They could have a disaster season. The Bucs don't look like they're very good. I mean, they're very – the Raiders, you know, it's the Raiders. But they did upgrade in the offseason. There's not very many teams on their schedule where I look at and say, that looks like a pretty – the Bills, but they've struggled with the Bills.
Sure.
But they don't – there's not games you identify and you go, well, you know that team's going to suck, so that should be – it should be a W, right?
Well, there's seven games on the schedule out of 16 against teams that were in the playoffs a year ago. And now the NFL, more than any other sport, is prone to seeing teams who were in the playoffs slip and teams that were way outside do the reverse and get up there and be a contender. See Jacksonville last year, Carolina after the Super Bowl, all those sort of things. But – at least right now in June, we can only go by what teams were last year and kind of how we project them this year. And it looks like a difficult schedule on its face. I think particularly that first month's hard with who they play and where they play them. And then, you know, we'll see where they are at the end of the season as they try and close strong.
I'm going to say this. They're going to go into Cleveland and beat the brakes off the Browns. I firmly believe that. They're going to go in there and beat – because – that team defensively is ready to go. They're going to go in there, and they're going to take it to the Browns. I think Mariota's going to have under 200 yards passing, and they're going to take it to the Browns. Why? Because they're going to go back to that pack and play football. They're going to go in there, play that strong defense, and stuff the ball down the Browns' throat. I believe that wholeheartedly.
I think that is a totally unpopular opinion amongst the national media who are oohing and aahing over this new Browns roster. Just about anybody I know who knows the Titans well, and I'm one of them, I think the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. I think this is a game where they go in there and that defense has a lockdown effort and Derrick Henry or Deion Lewis or both of them control the game on the ground and the Titans go win like 20-7 type of thing.
Yep.
I think it's going to be a really, really impressive opener
statement
in Cleveland.
Time.
And people are going to be like, what happened to the Browns? We thought they were – and who are these Titans? Adam Rank thought they were going to be 3-13. I think it is going to be a really interesting opening day where the Titans have a chance to make a statement.
All right, we'll come back more with Teron Davenport in studio this hour, talking with TD, NFL Nation reporter for ESPN on the Tennessee Titans. More with him next on Darren and Donick, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Things are getting interesting in Omaha. Auburn trying to rally in the bottom of the eighth. Or is it the top of the eighth? I don't know. I can't see.
It's the bottom of the eighth.
Bottom of the eighth. Bases loaded, two outs. Louisville up 5-2. But the Tigers have the bases juiced. Bases packed, two outs. The closer that we talked about, who really hasn't done significant pitching in weeks, has not looked sharp for Louisville.
And remember when we said that there's a chance Vanderbilt will play before 2 o'clock? That seems to be gone.
It seems to be slipping away. Yeah, I don't think that is going to happen. Darren McFarland, Steve Lehman, News Channel 5, Teron Davenport, from ESPN and talking with TD podcast. You can check it out and you can hear it here on 102.5 The Game. We talked a lot about the Jags. We talked a lot about the Texans, and really a lot of it wasn't good stuff. We've talked about the Titans. What about the Colts, the team everybody has already, I don't even want to say penciled in. I think they've put it in pen. They've put it in a Sharpie. They're going to win the division. They're a playoff team. Look out. Here come the Colts.
I think the Colts are in good shape, man. You know, the music that we had coming on, I thought we were going to start talking Steelers, but you know what I mean, the black and yellow. But, yeah, I think the Colts are in good shape, especially I love that receiver core that they have. You have just speed for days in Paris Paris Hilton. And T.Y. Hilton and Paris Campbell, right? And then now you got the big body and Devin Funchess. You got Ebron. That passing game is going to be really good. So it's going to open up things for the running game. Nyheim Himes is a solid back. Yeah. Marlon Mack is capable. He's a borderline 1,000-yard production type of back. So, and that offensive line is legit. The question has been the defense, right? So, you know, they go out and they got a guy. I know the Titans were very interested in Ben Bonigu from TCU. I like Nate Harrison, who they had already. He was a guy that may not even make the roster now because of the additions they made. So they've done a really good job just overall addressing their needs. Didn't they sign Justin Houston too, I believe, right? Mm-hmm. So whatever they needed, they went out and addressed. I have no doubt the team is going to be top two in the division, and they have that good old shadow over the Titans with Andrew Luck. I mean, it's been a long time since – you know, that the Titans have been able to beat the Colts with Luck under center.
That's why that opening week game, or the home opener, is so fascinating. Because you've got the jerseys going to be retired. You've got the Colts coming to town. Mm-hmm. It's a rematch of week 17. You assume Mariota's going to be able to play, hopefully, in week two. It just, that's going to set the tone. Because if the Titans could go out and win that game, especially if they go to Cleveland and do what we seem to think they're going to do in week one, now all of a sudden you're feeling totally different about what this division looks like and what that rivalry looks like, where if Indianapolis comes in here and beats you again,
yeah,
it's going to look very much like it's Indianapolis' yeah. division and everybody else.
Those first two games can really, really set the tone for the Titans this year.
Good or bad.
Good or bad.
Right.
That good or bad. They go out, do the thing to Cleveland, and then come back with all that emotion riding pregame. And ride that and just come up, score a touchdown on the first drive. Score a touchdown on that first drive. If they do that, they're winning the game. And the tone is set for the rest of the year.
I like what you said, but it also can have the reverse effect.
Oh,
if you
yeah,
go to Cleveland
sure.
and you don't find a way to win, or you lose a tough one,
sure.
last second field goal or whatever, lose in overtime, and then you come here, the game, as mm-hmm. we just talked about, and their jersey retirement, and you never beat Luck, and everything that's going to be said, and how it ended last year. Everything is set up. Should be a great crowd. Home opener. Nice weather.
Improved and you don't, Wi-Fi.
And improved Wi-Fi, which is important these days.
It is.
And you don't take care of business. Now you're 0-2. And, oh, yeah. by the way, you're going to Jacksonville, and then you've got going to Atlanta, and it's like, wow. Like, you better get on track quick, or just kind of like what we were talking about. The thing can get sideways in a hurry. But you're right. To me, it is intriguing, these first two games, because you can either set the tone in a good way for the rest of the season, or it possibly could set the tone in a bad way for the rest of the season.
Yeah, it really can. And I know a lot of players and coaches that tell you that they don't really believe in momentum from one game to another, but I really think for this team, momentum from the first game into the second game into the third can really, really have a factor. Especially, like I said, you know, that home, Eddie George is going to plant the stick, the sword rather, jersey going up, Steve McNair, there's a lot of emotion tied to that. And the thing that I really like about this Titans team is the players on the team buy into, like, they're tied into the guys who have played before. You see Kevin Byard and Kenny Vaccaro and Taylor Lewan, all these guys retweeting, you know, the Eddie George thing. Derrick Henry mm-hmm. Retweeting it. These guys buy into, so there's just something about that I think the vibe, the energy will provide, and it's just they have to start. If they start good, they start well in that game, it'll be good for them.
I agree. It'll be interesting. That first month of the season, we thought it last year. We thought it was very difficult, and they wound up 3-1
yeah.
through that first month. And then the part of the schedule we thought may get a little bit easier got a little bit difficult for them. So we'll see how they manage it. But I do think this team feels like a team, and Vrabel's talked about this, in the good to great thing that they've talked about. They're talking about play on the field and ultimately mm-hmm. wins.
Yep.
But he said it last week. A big part of that starts with the belief that you can do it. And I think last year there was enough new that you didn't necessarily know your own job yet. So it was hard to totally believe that the guy next to you was going to get his job done. And then collectively as a team, you were going to win. As the season got along, I think they started to realize, okay, this stuff we're doing is working. Okay, our defense is top 10. Okay, even a banged-up offense, we're figuring out ways to win games. I think that belief really started to grow last year. Now you're healthy. Now your roster's a little better. Now everybody on the team understands what they're supposed to do. I don't know what will happen on the field in terms of the wins and losses, but I think going into the season, they have a belief on this team right now that I don't think you could sense at this time last year when everything was so new.
Makes sense, because like you said, everything was new. And that belief is only compounded by winning. And that's why I think these first couple of games are so important, because I think this is a team that if they don't start well, it could be that here we go again thing. We're not going to point fingers, but we're going out there and getting beat. Here we go again. We're the same old Titans. And I think that's something that the guys have to think about and understand that in order to break that mold of being 3 years straight, 9-7, you have to go out there and be dominant and stack wins. And to stack wins, you got to stack solid practices. That's where it starts. So,
when we come back, speaking of new, the three of us, and we're not going to tell each other who we're going to put in or who we're going to put down. We're going to see if we come up with the same answer or answers. You can only pick one. Most impactful new player. New player. Most impactful new player will be whom? Let's see how we answer that to close out the third hour of Darren and Donick, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tron Davenport in studio. He's been nice enough to hang with us this hour. NFL Nation reporter for ESPN on the Titans. Also talking with TD. Latest installment
is coming tonight. Like I said, we're going to be ranking the rosters.
Okay.
My position, AFC, so tune in.
But not like Adam Rank. You'll be doing it.
Yeah,
a little
not
bit
like
different.
Adam Rank. Yeah. No.
You're going to actually have analysis.
We're
going to
be realistic.
So you've actually put some thought into it?
I actually did. Yeah.
That's what a crazy concept.
You would think.
Good
right?
For you, Teron.
Thank you.
I said, you were throwing out the word new. So I said, and then we didn't discuss it during the break. But let's go around the room, and we're going to start with you since you're our guest. Most impactful new player to this year's Tennessee Titans team will be whom?
I mean,
and why?
The easy answer is Adam Humphries, but I'm going to take a different route. I'm going to go with Roger Saffold. And the reason why I'm going with Saffold is because what do we talk about having to do? Set the tone. Saffold sets the tone in the weight room. When they get out there on the field and the pads go on, you're going to see how he sets the tone there. And I think when you look at this team, most of Derrick Henry's longer, more productive runs come on the left side. They are going to be very left-handed, Taylor Lewan and Roger Saffold. And then on top of that, the pass blocking. They have ESPN has a win rate, a pass block win rate, where you hold your block for 2.5 or more seconds. Saffold is among the best in the league when it comes to that. Now, I'm not a big metrics guy, big stats guy, but if I'm a receiver running a route and I have a guy up front giving my quarterback 2.5 seconds on average or more to throw me the ball, I'm liking that. So Saffold, I think, will really set the tone. And that just spreads out among everything because every unit feeds off of the other.
It's funny, Darren. You said it doesn't matter if we pick the same guys, but you have to pick one. When he started with Adam Humphries, I was like, I'm going to go with Roger Saffold. And then he went with Roger Saffold, and I went back to Adam Humphries because I agree 100%. You know, Cam Wake on defense I think could be a really impactful guy. But this defense is already good.
Yep.
And if they don't get a pass rush, I think the defense is still going to be good because Dean Pease will scheme it up to a point that they'll get pressure like they did a year ago.
By the way, you can say a draft pick because that's a new guy.
True. Mm-hmm. But the offense is where I think you're going to see the drastic change with this team. And I agree with everything Teron just said about Saffold. But to me, I'm going to stick with Humphries for this reason. Last year, they had no real ability to pass the ball, and Corey Davis, by the end of the season, was pretty much the only reliable receiver they could go to. And he made a great stride in his game last year in his second year with a lot of attention on him. I'm not sure how much attention he's going to get this year when you also have Adam Humphries out there, and you also have A.J. Brown out there, and you also have Delanie Walker back. So to me, Adam Humphries, because he's the known commodity, he's a He's a guy that's one of the best slot receivers in the league. I think he's going to be great in the red zone. I think he's going to be great on third down. I think that's going to be a huge safety blanket for Marcus Mariota within this offense. So I'm going to go Adam Humphries.
I, too, like you, when Teron said Adam Humphries, I'm like, yes, okay, he's not going to say who I'm going to say. Good, because I wanted to see if we could all say somebody different. But my answer all along was Saffold. I just think that left side.
So in the end, we all said the same thing.
We basically did. You just kind of wanted, it's like, I'll go the other way.
You played along with the game.
Yeah, you did. And you're like, oh, I'll provide a different insight. But so it's that obvious, huh? Is Saffold just the answer? Is that who it needs to be? Let me ask you that. Is that what the answer needs to be?
I believe what I just said about Humphries, by the way. I mean, you know, I wasn't just being a contrarian there. I think he's massively important for this team. But, yeah, at the end of the day, it all starts up front, doesn't it?
Yeah, and that's the bottom line. But the thing with Humphries is just the ability to extend drives. And that extending drives gives what? Everyone else more opportunities. So that's why Humphries, being that third and sixth or more, running that 7-yard route, catching the ball and falling down after 7 yards, that gives him the first down. But, by the way, he does give you those yards after the catch, too. So Humphries is crucial.
Here's another way I know that our answers are right, and I'm guessing you've picked up on this, too, TD. It is very difficult to get coaches, head coaches, coordinators, position coaches, this time of year, to give you sort of an evaluation of a player. I mean, we asked about Derrick Henry, and they're like, eh, he's Derrick Henry. You know, it wasn't like he's doing what he did in December still. He's carrying it over. It's just he's Derrick Henry. You ask about rookies, and they're like, hey, he's a rookie. Who knows? You know, it's very difficult to get any sort of a individual evaluation about a guy at this time of year. You ask any of the coaches about the impact that Roger Saffold or Adam Humphries has had to this offense, and they immediately start glowing about the professionalism, about what Humphries brings to the wide receiver room, how he's going to bring this underneath passing game to the team, or Saffold, the maturity, the dominance on the offensive line, how he works with Taylor Lewan. Those are the two guys, when you look at this team and you ask a coach, give me an evaluation of that guy right here in June without pads on or anything, and they will definitively say those guys make us better.
Yep.
So nobody flirted with A.J. Brown?
No.
Okay. Nobody flirted with Cameron Wake?
Thought about it, but no.
The offense is where this team gets better this year.
Okay.
Cameron Wake might be a really good player, but this defense doesn't have a whole lot more room. I mean, it can go, I guess, from good to great or really good to great. But the offense for this team to take the next step has to go from average to below average to great.
Yep.
If there's a miracle cure out there that would have Jeffrey Simmons in the mix in training camp and preseason, would anybody have flirted with Jeffrey Simmons if he was coming in with a clean bill of health into the season?
I think he would be a strong candidate just because of being strong up the middle, pairing with Casey, and impacting passing games that way.
Kevin Byard new deal will happen when? Do you think that's his answer too when you say that to him?
Answer is you hear a clap and you hear this right here.
Cha-ching.
Rubbing your hands together because you know you about to get paid in full. PIF, man.
And he puts on a green shirt, right?
That's right. With a dollar sign.
Yeah, what site can you get that from?
I'm sure it's out there.
So do you think it happens in the next couple of months?
I think it happens by the end of the first week of training camp. Might be before.
Is this like another?
I think it's the type of thing that they'll do to kind of – they did this last year with Delaney and Taylor. I think it's the type of thing where they'll kick off training camp kind of with a bang by locking down one of their most important players.
Okay. And what's that magic number going to be? Double digits?
They're going to have to guarantee, what, 13 or 14?
I'm not talking about the guarantee.
What's it going to
be per?
Probably going to be like 40-something.
Right, but I mean the per.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Wait, 13 to 14 per year.
13 to 14?
You look at what the top – Byard's the top. You look at what the tops are getting.
It's safety, okay.
Is Byard more deserving of Tyron Matthew? I would say yes.
Yeah. Mm.
Is he more deserving of Landon Collins? I would say yes.
Okay.
I don't see any safeties better. You know, Earl Thomas, That's the one where we could have a conversation.
Good stuff. As always, check out his podcast, Talking with TD. Dropping it today?
Tonight, yes, sir.
Tonight. All right. Always good to see you.
For sure. Appreciate
nice,
you.
Nice
guys.
Shirt. I'm not getting that one. I like it, though, but I'm not getting that one.
Next time he comes shirt. In, it's just going to be a dollar sign with 31 on the back. And that's it. Kevin Byard.
That'll do it for hour number three. We'll come back. We'll kick off the fourth and final hour. Jeff Merrick, that's next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.